WNYC is supported by Thompson Safaris, based in Boston and Tanzania, offering sustainable African safaris and Kilimanjaro treks for over 30 years. Our home, your adventure. More at thompsonsafaris.com.
The damage caused by Hurricane Sandy has raised new questions about how to best waterproof our region. One idea that's been floated is the use of storm surge barriers. It's a costly and controversial approach, but one that's worked in many other cities. And joining us now are Alex Marshall, who's written an article about storm barriers in New York City called The $5.9 Billion Question. It appears in the February issue of Metropolis Magazine. Mr. Marshall is also the author of The Surprising Design of Market Economies, published by University of Texas Press. Also with us is Pete Dirk, Global Director for Water Management at Arcadis, which has done work in the Netherlands and New Orleans, and Malcolm Bowman, who also joins us. He's a distinguished professor of oceanography at SUNY Stony Brook, and I'm very pleased to welcome all of them to our program. Hello.
Hello. Great to be here.
Alex, over the last few decades, Alex, many cities like London, Rotterdam, and New Orleans have built storm barriers. Why is New York City lagged behind them in these kinds of projects?
I think it would be because this is a really big infrastructure project, and historically we have lagged behind in big infrastructure projects. Despite our subways and other infrastructure, these really mega projects is something that we have, hesitated at compared to other cities around the globe.
Pete, when New York was a Dutch outpost called New Amsterdam, the early colonists built a lot of landfill that's now Lower Manhattan. Do you think we're going to have to start thinking more like the Dutch again, this time in terms of water management?
Well, I think the Netherlands certainly has some good ideas for flood protection that might be useful in New York. I would like to say New York is also quite fortunate that it still has plenty of options before it comes into all those Dutch kind of solutions, as we have also implemented now in New Orleans. The fortunate thing is that New York is still not below sea level, so it has a number of options still open. But storm surge barriers and flood walls and dikes are certainly also to be considered.
You say still not below sea level. But with climate change, that may change somewhere in the near or far future?
Well, definitely climate change will change that, but that will really be on the long term. New York has quite some vulnerable areas, let's say between 0 and 10 feet above sea level. Sandy showed that, of course, quite obviously. But still, this is not the situation like in the Netherlands or New Orleans. These places are up to 20 feet below sea level, a bath tube that fills up when a levee fails or when a flood wall fails or a barrier doesn't close. Within seconds or minutes, the whole area will fill up like a bath tube, up to 4 or 5 meters of water, and you will have 1,000 or more casualties. That is something that cannot happen in New York. Of course, Sandy showed that the devastation that a storm can produce to the infrastructure, the vital infrastructure, and everything that is below sea level in the ground, is of course big magnitude. So a lot of things to worry about, but not so much the loss of life issue, I would say.
Well, Hurricane Sandy caused tremendous damage, some of which still hasn't been cleaned up. Malcolm, where would we need to place barriers around New York to prevent the type of destruction we witnessed during Sandy?
Back in 2009, I helped organize a conference at Brooklyn Polytech, sponsored by the American Society of Civil Engineers, and Piet's group were there, and various major engineering firms were given assignments, look at different locations around the harbor and see what they could come up with conceptual designs for storm surge barriers. And Arcadis was given the Verrazano Narrows challenge, and another firm was given what we call the Outer Harbor Gateway, which is further out between Sandy Hook, New Jersey, and Far Rockaway, another firm, Upper East River, and so forth. So various locations depend on just how much of the metro region you feel you need to protect. Hurricane Sandy, most of the casualties were actually in southeastern coast of Staten Island. And so,
well, about that, the Verrazano Narrows area is to the west of that. So if we put up a barrier there, would it do much for the eastern side of Staten Island?
Well, no, it wouldn't. And this is no reflection on Arcadis at all, and they're very famous designs for swinging gates. But in terms of the geography, you have to keep in mind that there are 2 to 3 million people in the outer boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens who live less than 6 feet or 2 meters above sea level. We have the three major airports, including Newark and Kennedy, built right on the water's edge. And so an outer harbor gateway, and it could certainly use Arcadis' designs, would mm-hmm. protect all those regions I just mentioned.
Alex, you write about one barrier called the New York-New Jersey Outer Harbor Gateway. How much attention is this proposal and others like it getting from policymakers?
Well, I think before Sandy, it was getting very little attention. It was just kind of one of those crazy ideas that people talk about.
But you'd have to build the barrier from Breezy Point to Sandy Hook, New Jersey, a distance of 5 miles for anything to be effective, wouldn't it?
I think to a lot of New Yorkers and around the region, they will have never heard of this idea, and at first it'll just be crazy. But when you look at a map and you realize that you could stretch a barrier across the 5 mile big harbor, it's really, you kind of have an aha moment. You realize, you know, you can protect basically most of the region with this big barrier, and you kind of go, wow, you know, that's maybe worth thinking about. Now it's also true that there have been developing other approaches to handling flooding, and there is a kind of semi split among the community among how to approach it. But the barrier is, you know, you can really see the possible worth of it.
Well, on our show page at WNYC.org, we have pictures of both the New York, New Jersey Outer Harbor Gateway and of that flood barrier for the Verrazano Narrows you designed in 2009, Pete.
Yep.
Would putting a barrier, can you explain why putting a barrier on the Verrazano Narrows Bridge seems like a practical approach?
Exactly. This was the most practical approach, the best location for a barrier to protect Manhattan, Brooklyn South, parts of New Jersey on the west side. So a good location for a barrier. The advantage would be that the barrier would have only very limited impact on the in and out flow of the tidal flows. The Hudson is a tidal estuary, of course, with tremendous in and out flows. So it would be a very good location. Also, the shortening the line of defense, as we call the strategy in the Netherlands. At the same time, I'm absolutely aware of the fact that a barrier right there would not solve all the problems, but you should never build just a barrier. A barrier should be part of a system, of a flood protection system. And for that system, you need to make a plan first. So I would say don't only consider to build a barrier here or a barrier there, but make a plan, use a systems approach, and have a plan, just like we had in the Netherlands, what we called our Delta plan.
Well, Malcolm, if we built barriers, the water isn't going to, maybe it won't flood New York Harbor, but it's going to have to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a surge in water, the water is not just going to go back where it came from, is it?
Well, this is a very interesting question, and this is probably the question that I and probably Piet get asked most often, is that if you suddenly slam gates shut, no matter where they are, where is that surge going to go to? Is it going to splash around and then flood the surrounding country on both ends?
Well, the Jersey shoreline, Long
Jersey
Island.
Shoreline, exactly, but that's not how it works. Piet can tell you the Dutch experience, but what you do is that, anticipating the storm's arrival, you close the gates at low tide before the storm arrives. So that's 6 feet down to start with. And then as the storm approaches and the water gets blown against the coast, I mean, it senses that the harbor is shut off and the storm surge will build up on the outside of the barrier. But it was really no more, or just maybe a few inches more than it would have been if the gates weren't there. So it's not so much, this huge slug of water that was going to come crashing into the harbor is suddenly stopped dead in its tracks and it splashes elsewhere. It doesn't work like that.
Well, Alex, wouldn't storm gates be politically problematic because no matter where you build one, there's always going to be someone who lives nearby and says, I'm not going to be protected, or this is really ugly and I don't want to have to live with it?
I think there will always be someone who is left out, and that will probably always be a problem. The good thing about the big barrier, the outer harbor barrier, is that a huge chunk of the region would be protected. And perhaps just because it involves so many people, involves New Jersey and New York, perhaps a really big mega project like this could actually come together more quickly than, say, a smaller one.
Well, who would pay for it? Would this be a federal project? Would this have to be? Because we could not get New York and New Jersey to agree on a rail line under the Hudson River, because of possible expense. Just think of what happens when you're asking people, how many billions of dollars? $5.9 billion?
You know, that does not seem like a really huge price tag to me to protect the whole region. And now, maybe that's a low ball, or maybe that's, I know that doesn't consider some other elements of it.
How much is it compared to the amount of damage we have seen without it?
Well, I mean, Sandy, it caused at least $20 billion worth of damage right there. And I think that's just a limited estimate. So, I mean, the cost of the barrier would pay for itself in one, in one big storm. Mm-hmm. The Army Corps of Engineers would probably be the ones to carry this out. There have been, you were asking about, how could you get this done? It is, I think, telling that in New Orleans, after the big damage from Katrina, they built this whole new series of flood walls, one that Pierre here was involved with, that cost something like $14 billion and was done in, I think, 5 or 7 years. So that's
even
pretty
less
speedy.
Another approach that I've been promoting is for the Outer Harbor Gateway would be to make it a multi-purpose structure. In other words, this system would not be a vertical wall. It's more like a broad levee or dike like they have in the Netherlands. And on top, you could put a 6-lane interstate bypass highway connecting New Jersey to Long Island and Kennedy airports. And that could be a highway, a toll road, which would generate considerable income, and also perhaps light rail from Newark Airport to Kennedy Airport. As well, there could be commercial interests like marinas and so forth built inside barriers, no matter where they were. So I think that might make it a lot more attractive. Certainly the George Washington Bridge is a big money spinner for the Port Authority in New York, New Jersey. We also need to look at the...
Wait, I want to stop you there for a moment, because I want to ask Alex, what do you think environmentalists would say about an approach like that?
I think there is a lot of skepticism right now about this approach, not absolute skepticism, but some skepticism. And I think it comes in part because there have been a lot of sort of softer approaches that have been developed over the last decade or so on handling flooding.
And we'll come back to those and this one as well after we take a little break. My guests are Alex Marshall, whose article, The $5.9 Billion Question, is in the February issue of Metropolis Magazine. Malcolm Bowman is professor of oceanography at SUNY Stony Brook. And is it Pete or Piet? Because I've always been told that the Dutch say Pete.
My name is Pete, but Malcolm is also always calling me Piet, so I don't mind.
recently, an art historian corrected me when I said Pete Mondrian. She said Piet Mondrian, and, I didn't try to defend myself, but it's Pete Dirk, Global Director for Water Management at Arcadis. Stay with us for more. And we are back with Pete Dirk, Global Director for Water Management at Arcadis, which has done work in the Netherlands and New Orleans. Malcolm Bowman is a distinguished professor of oceanography at SUNY Stony Brook. And Alex Marshall has written an article about storm barriers in New York City called The $5.9 Billion Question, which appears in the February issue of Metropolis Magazine. One of the approaches that has been advocated by a number of architects and environmentalists involves essentially working with nature by doing things like recreating marshland, sowing oyster beds, and installing porous sidewalks that can absorb storm water. Alex, do these kinds of proposals enjoy any political support?
Well, I'm not sure of their political support here, but there are really interesting things being done, and Holland has certainly paved the way here. Holland has been a pioneer in big physical infrastructure, like walls, and they're also now a pioneer in softer ways. And there is a lot to be said for these approaches. I think to me the question is, ultimately, do you need some big, heavy infrastructure as well to support some place as intensive as New York City?
And Pete, how has it worked in the Netherlands?
Well, we have a large new program, a public-private partnership in Holland that is called Building with Nature. And I think the word says it all. This is new ways to deal with how can we use the forces of nature to protect ourselves better? How can we develop more sustainable solutions that more equally the way how nature builds its own solutions? These solutions in the long term definitely will be more sustainable and stronger than the civil engineering solutions that we have right now. What we're doing basically is making a combination of those things. For instance, we're strengthening our coastline and our dunes and our dikes with sand suppletion, not in the traditional way by just throwing it on the beach, but by very clever, very smart, putting it right in the right place in the ocean as a spot of sand and let the ocean transport or the sea, let it transport the sand itself with its sedimentation process along the coast and strengthen that coast in a very natural way. At the same time, we are strengthening our dunes, for instance, by building invisible dikes underneath them. You see a wonderful dune landscape, and the ecosystems people and environmentalists are really thrilled. They see a great landscape with high value, but underneath there is a strong dike. So in case it is necessary, it will work.
Now, are people
a perfect mix?
Are people prevented from building their houses along the shoreline? Because it's hard to develop marshland when you have all those houses there.
Yeah, one of the issues that we have to deal with in Holland also, just like in the U.S., is what do you do with those people who want to live outside of the primary flood protection system? Well, up to a certain level, those who want to do it will have to protect themselves or will have to build in such a way that it is resilient against a flood. Well, in some cases, like in the case of producing marshlands, I think you will have to protect that areas. But I think compared to the large urban communities that you protect, and you should imagine it's New York, but also the mega cities in the world, you're talking about tens of millions of people that have to be protected. They need their protection also of their vast infrastructure and all the valuable assets that are there. And you have to balance there between, let's say, taking care of the individuals and the large groups of people.
Now, Malcolm, what do you think about this hybrid approach?
Well, I think the buzzword in New York City is resilience. And what does that mean?
Yep.
That means that following a catastrophe like Sandy, the weak spots have been identified, they've been strengthened, and so hopefully next time around they will be protected. It's a kind of patch-up in a way, but it's necessary. Certainly a nice fully supported that, but it's not sufficient. It doesn't protect against a huge megastorm like Sandy. So, as Peter's been saying, you need a family of solutions. And growing seaweed in New York Harbor and growing oyster beds would have done nothing to stop the surge, the Sandy surge that flooded Lower Manhattan.
But hasn't Mayor Bloomberg been skeptical of barriers?
Well, yes, he has, and that sort of surprised me in a way because he has an engineering background, and I think if he took his advisors, his experts, his engineers to Europe. If he goes to the United Kingdom looking at the Thames Barrier that Alex has talked about in his article, if he goes to the Netherlands, and he should also go to Russia, he should go to St. Petersburg, because in many ways that's very similar to New York City, and it's built on a river delta, the River Neva. It's perennially flooded, and they have built this ring of protection around their city, so we could learn a lot from that. And I think if Mayor Bloomberg were to take the time out to go visit, you know, he would see it slightly differently.
Now, the mayor, if anything, has encouraged development along the waterfront. Alex, do you think that Sandy will change the economics of waterfront development in places like Greenpoint and Williamsburg?
You know, I think it actually might not, because a lot
of Staten Island is another example.
Yeah, because some of this newer development actually came through Sandy. Okay, you know, it was built in a kind of, to some degree, anticipating it. So I think you actually can build waterfront development that will be okay. Now, there's a planning question of whether should you. I personally think you should keep big high-rises off the waterfront and step them back and put them closer to subways and things like that. But I think from an engineering point or architectural point, you can build them in a way that they're going to be okay.
Well, everything changed with the 2005 rezoning in New York City, which pretty much encouraged the development of these things, partly because it wanted to, I guess, goose up the economy.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not a fan of that approach, at least not completely. But it is what it is, as I say.
Now, Malcolm and Pete, is it difficult to construct a movable structure underwater?
Well, it depends.
Malcolm first, I guess, and Pete.
And how deep the water is, how strong the tidal currents are.
Well, we're talking about New York. Let's talk about this situation. If we were building them, New York Harbor is pretty deep, isn't it?
Well, Verrazano Narrows is deep, actually. It's over 100 feet in places, and that may be a problem for building an engineering structure that does not block the river flow. We have to keep in mind we have to discharge the Hudson River at all times. The one advantage of the Outer Harbor Gateway is that although it is 5 miles across, it's only 20 to 25 feet deep, except for the dredged navigation channel. And that provides makes it a lot easier from an engineering perspective. In terms of, mega projects, this is on a scale of civil engineering of the Hoover Dam and other great projects. But what a great stimulus project that would be, putting tens of thousands of people to work for years.
Yeah. And maybe to react to that, Malcolm, just the example of New Orleans one more time. Let's not forget that $14.5 billion of work was constructed in just 4 or 5 years' time with a number of storm surge barriers at locations that were also considered very, very tough, far outside in very, very soft soils. Mm-hmm. I can tell you honestly, I'm a Dutch engineer, and I was surprised to see the Americans, and in particular also my own American colleagues, which should not forget I have more American colleagues with Arcadis than Dutch colleagues, to see how Americans were capable of building a delta plan in 4 years' time that took us in the Netherlands 40 years. So you're 10 times faster than we are.
Well, Arcadis,
that's an amazing achievement. So you can build those barriers.
Your film, Arcadis, designed a barrier that was constructed in New Orleans as a response to Hurricane Katrina. What kinds of challenges did you face there? Do you think that there are specific lessons we can get from New Orleans applicable to New York? Because these are very different cities, aren't they?
They are, of course, completely different, but some of the challenges are comparable. A big difference is the challenge that we had to build in extremely soft soils out there, and that was one of the major challenges. But the real challenges was the time. The Army Corps of Engineers had put a deadline on the 1st of June 2011, and they said every next hurricane season without protection for New Orleans is one too much. We'll put you under that time pressure. You have to be ready. So the best innovations were maybe not even in the technical sense, but were in the project management and the process way, how to produce a barrier like that as fast as possible with very early industry involvement, with new procurement styles, with, well, a lot of things that really speeded it up. And one of the major achievements was that it was ready so fast. And remember, we had Hurricane Isaac, and that proved that the Corps was right there, because New Orleans was ready when Isaac came, and Isaac might have destroyed New Orleans one more time. And instead of that, New Orleans can now say that they have already a full return on their investment of $15 billion within a year or so. So that's quite an achievement.
Now, Alex, other American cities like Stamford, Connecticut have storm barriers that worked very well during Sandy. Were they very expensive to erect?
Yeah, I don't know the cost of the Stamford barrier because it's been there quite a while, I think 30 or maybe 50 years. But to pick up on what Pete was saying, it's not just New Orleans and New York that are facing this. The reporting on this article really brought to me the reality of climate change, and that I was like, wow, oceans really are rising. And so I'm from Norfolk, Virginia. That's my hometown, and it has a great big harbor. I wouldn't be surprised if they're starting conversations about this, or Seattle.
About Venice?
Now, Venice has a big barrier under construction, and I'm
$7.9 billion system that includes a series of inflatable gates that would be filled with compressed air. Has that ever worked in the past?
You know, it's not finished. Now, I'm a huge fan of Venice. I have a soft place for it. And so I'm looking forward to this being completed, I think, supposed to be next year, because it should work. It should protect this beautiful city.
Well, in London, they have storm barriers that are considered quite beautiful. Is attractiveness part of the way these projects are sold, Malcolm?
Well, yes, it's interesting. I visited the London, the Thames River Barrier last month, and it's just become a matter of fact. It's there. It's used up to 10 times a year. It doesn't take an act of the government to decide to close it. I was the guest of the senior engineer, and he and three colleagues decide by telephone, we've got to close the gates tonight, and they just do it. And it's protected the city of London, parts of which are only 6 inches above high tide level, since 1982. So it's not at all controversial. In fact, it's a tourist attraction. You can go there, you can inspect it, you can see working models. And
don't forget Asia. Eh? And I'm working in Jakarta with our cases, in Bangkok, in Singapore.
Yes.
Dhaka is coming up, Ho Chi Minh City. All over Southeast Asia, you'll find these new developments, these mega cities. They're all in the same vulnerable position. They're carrying the world economy, and they all need flood protection. Maybe barriers, but at least they will need a good plan and a good system to protect them. So in that sense, the U.S. could also look at this from just like the Dutch do, as an opportunity. Yeah.
But we have very little money, and it seems to me that very little time. We also have very little money. It seems the stimulus package was dead on arrival in Washington. And many states, New York, New Jersey, have budget problems. Alex, in about 15 seconds, where's this money coming from?
I think it can be found. It's the political will that's necessary. This is not.
Well, people didn't even want it from some states. Didn't even want to give New York and New Jersey any money to help us after Hurricane Sandy.
True, but you know, the reality of water in your basement or water in your streets, I think that can actually bring people together more than say, you know, something else.
Alex Marshall's article, The $5.9 Billion Question, is in the February issue of Metropolis Magazine. Pete Dirk is director of water management for Arcadis. Malcolm Bowman is a distinguished professor of oceanography at SUNY Stony Brook. Thank you all so much for talking with us today.
Okay, it was a pleasure.